Hey, everybody, it's Kai. This is the Corner Office Podcast. Thanks for spending the next 20 or 30 minutes with us. We appreciate it. And to those people leaving us comments and those five-star reviews, we appreciate that, too. Let me give a couple of shout-outs here. Thanks, Boogie Fries, Stephanie9608, and JB0120, or maybe it's JBO120, who knows. Anyway, back to what you're really here for, the Corner Office Podcast. I was in Washington, D.C. the other week at National Geographic headquarters. As you might imagine, the lobby was filled with pictures and maps and charts and artifacts, and I was there to interview Susan Goldberg, the editor-in-chief of National Geographic magazine, only the 10th person to hold that job for the magazine in well over 100 years of its history. But don't make the mistake of thinking that this magazine, founded in 1888, isn't embracing the 21st century. Au contraire. So let's get to it.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Susan Goldberg, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
This is a remarkably modern office for so old and august a magazine.
Well, we are delighted with these offices, and people can't see it, but we have an open, clean, modern office with lots of light and not a lot of walls.
And lots of glass, actually.
Lots of glass, and that is all about how we are pivoting our storytelling.
How have you, then, changed this place? I mean, you come from hardcore journalism, newspapers, Bloomberg, and here you are now running a magazine.
Well, running a magazine, but also all of the digital extensions of the magazine and our content, which is, you know, we all know it is a digital future, and hence this modern office, because we realized when we were in our old offices, everybody had their own private office, and you would look down these long hallways and all of the doors would be shut, which might work if you're putting out just a monthly magazine. But if you're doing news and information and reaching consumers in real time every single day, you can't have that kind of office.
You actually called it late 60s, early 70s Mad Men, right?
Oh, it was so Mad Men. I thought it was kind of depressing coming from an environment of open offices, because that's how newsrooms really have been for a long time. Coming into a situation where everybody was walled off, it didn't work well.
All right, so let me use a word here that maybe a lot of people still, although you will protest, I'm sure, think of National Geographic as old and stodgy.
There are some people who think of National Geographic as old and stodgy, but I would tell you that 19 million young people who visit us every month on Snapchat certainly don't think of us as old and stodgy, and 60 million Instagram followers don't think of us as old and stodgy, nor do, you know, 50 million Facebook followers.
I wonder if you got, actually, thinking about Snapchat and social media, I wonder if you got the timing exactly right, because here's a magazine and an editorial process, right? Let's just assume I'm talking about all the digital extensions. But it's a magazine founded on photojournalism. Right. And now you translate neatly into everybody on their phones looking at this going, hey, look at this.
Well, visual storytelling is, you know, the strength of National Geographic. And so the fact that everybody now carries a camera and everybody thinks visually now so much more has, in fact, worked really well for us. But so have the core subject areas of the magazine. So we've always been about science and exploration and innovation and species preservation and the health of the planet. And I will tell you, millennials really care about those topics.
Oh, yeah, no, totally they do. Tell me, though, how you fit all of that into this media age where it's all about speed and all about, if it's 5 minutes ago, it's old, when you guys have a history and a tradition of long form, plan it out months in advance, go to Africa or Antarctica or wherever, and bring back these really complicated stories.
So my answer to that really is there are very few stories that we need to break. I mean, we are not a news organization the way CNN or AP is. However, when some big event happens that's within our coverage area, so there's a huge new report on climate change, or if there's an avalanche on Mount Everest, we are going to cover those stories in real time because we're experts in those areas. But then what we'll do is step back and come back with a real National Geographic take on that, whether we come back with a visual way of looking at climate change for the web, or a few months later come back with an in-depth story about how the avalanche on Everest absolutely has changed climbing and Sherpa culture.
Did I read somewhere that you guys have a daily news meeting?
We have a daily news meeting.
What do you do in it?
Well, we talk about what we're doing today, what we're doing tomorrow, what we're doing next week, how we're going to take stories that we're doing on television and in our magazine and what the digital manifestations are going to be of those stories, whether something's happening today that we need to get out there or whether something's happening today, but we're going to take a second day or third day angle on it. So in those ways, it's a lot like what's going on at every kind of newsroom because there's been this merging and melding of different platforms.
How much does the history and tradition of this place weigh on you?
Oh, I wouldn't say it weighs on me, but I think about it all the time. I think it's an enormous benefit. To be the brand of National Geographic is, you know, such an honor and a privilege. It means people return your phone calls. It means that wherever you go in the world and somebody says, what do you do? And you say, you're the editor of National Geographic, pretty much the answer is, oh my God, that must be the best job in the world. And so, you know, that part I am always really aware of. But it's a huge door opener.
Who is your competition?
Oh, you know, our competition, like everybody, is people's time and getting heard above the blizzard of information and getting our stories out there in the media clutter. Cutting through that is really the strongest competition.
In magazine terms, Smithsonian, Nature?
Sure, they're all competitors, I would say. The New York Times is a competitor because they do a great job of covering science and technology and a lot of these other areas. They also have a global reach. So I look at places that have a global reach as being competitive to us because most media organizations have pulled back globally, as we know in the sea change of the last 10, 20 years. But we are still out there all over the world, and that's one of the ways that we're unique.
You came out of newspapers.
I did.
The Mercury News, the Plain Dealer in Cleveland, you went to Bloomberg. What was it about this job that was attractive to you?
It was a way to use my skills of doing stories in real time and important stories that can make a difference, but into different subject areas that I didn't spend most of my career covering. I didn't spend most of my career on science and environment and species preservation and innovation. And now I get to do that. And I think these are some of the most important topics that we have going forward. The other thing that attracted me, of course, was our ability to tell stories in a way that nobody else can.
Where does the average magazine or digital idea come from? Right?
People ask all the time. So, you know, some ideas are the ideas of editors. You know, we think, hey, this would be an important story for us to do. But we get a lot of ideas suggested to us by photographers and by writers. So people will come in with ideas, we'll debate them and see, do we think they hold up? What platforms do we think they would work on? How would we take what is proposed as a magazine story and figure out what would it look like on various digital platforms as well? And so, I mean, that's really exciting.
Yeah. This is a business, of course. A year and a half, 2 years ago or so, there was the deal with Fox and 21st Century Fox to make National Geographic Partners, in which 75-ish% of this magazine and the digital properties were entered into a partnership with Rupert Murdoch's group. Why did you do that?
It was really for two reasons. It was a brilliant business decision, I think. So the way it's split is in November 15th of this past year was when the deal was finalized, 9 months ago. And so what it allowed is the cleaving of National Geographic Society, which remains a nonprofit devoted to science, exploration, and education, and then this for-profit media group. So it was an expansion of our existing partnership with 21st Century Fox. We give 27% of all of our profits back to the National Geographic Society to help fund science exploration and education. And that is something that no other media group can claim. And for us, what we got was, you know, now we're part of a global, multifaceted media powerhouse, and it helps us get our information out there.
It's part of a multi-planetary. It's part of a multinational media group that a lot of people look at and go, wait, how does the National Geographic align with Rupert Murdoch and Fox?
Well, you know, 21st century Fox has got a lot of businesses that operate under that umbrella. It has National Geographic. It has FX. It has Academy Award-winning movies. It has all kinds of other businesses. Fox isn't just Fox News, which I understand that is what a lot of people think of, but Fox is also the Wall Street Journal.
When this deal was done, and acknowledging that your boss, Gary Nell, is probably going to hear this, did you grit your teeth a little bit and say, okay, Gary?
No, actually, when Gary told me about this, I was really excited because, you know, it was hard to be both a media company and a nonprofit. And I think it's easier to be a for-profit media company that gets to contribute to a nonprofit.
What's the next 5 years for this media enterprise?
Oh, I think you will continue to see massive digital innovation and, you know, a lot of experimentation for what works and what doesn't work for us. But you're going to also see the continued strength of the print magazine. And we haven't really talked about National Geographic Channel, but mm-hmm. It's the most widely distributed cable channel in the world, run by my wonderful colleague Courtney Monroe as the CEO. And you're going to see more content that works across all of our platforms.
How long will it take you, do you think, to become the media company you envisioned when you got here? What, you got here in 2011, right? And you got this job in 14?
No, I got here in 2014, and I got this job 4 months later.
Okay.
But that's okay. I don't know, because I think all media companies are evolving so quickly. I'm not entirely sure how long it will take to get there. You know, we need to be the world's leading provider of factual entertainment, factual information and entertainment. And I think that as National Geographic partners as a whole, as a media company, that we can do that.
What's the thing that keeps you up at night as you think about the media landscape?
What keeps me up is, the evolution of the business model. We all understand how to make money in print, and the, you know, television channel, of course, makes a lot of money. But digital, we are all struggling with how do we make more money on digital. And that's true of everybody in the digital information space. It's a struggle.
When will you know that you've sort of crested the hill and you're good to go?
I never want to crest the hill. To me, journalism, and I've been doing this for 35 years, is all about doing better stories the next day and reaching more people the day after that, and doing even better stories that reach even more people and a wider and more diverse audience. I don't see that you can ever say, ah, we're there. And if you do say, ah, we're there, I think you're not being ambitious enough.
Let me get back to this idea of Snapchat and Instagram and Facebook and discovering those new audiences. Is there a mission statement for your company going after those younger audiences?
Yeah, we want, well, you can see it right over there on the wall. It says, we believe in the power of science, exploration, and storytelling to change the world. And that is the mission of the magazine. You see that it printed in our magazine every month. But I think it's the same mission in reaching out to those younger audiences.
When you pick up the actual hard copy magazine every month,
yeah,
what's the first thing you go look at?
Well, I look at it before it, I look at
yeah,
it
but
from
let's,
its
so,
inception.
So put on your I'm a consumer lens, and let's say you go to your mailbox and you get that yellow magazine in the mailbox. What's the first thing you look at?
The pictures.
Yeah.
Doesn't everybody?
I always go to the back page and look for those ones from history. Right, the
oh,
old ones.
Okay. Well, yeah. You know, we are undergoing a bit of a redesign of the magazine too, so you can look for that in the coming months. We have, if I may preview a little bit of what we've got coming. In November, we at National Geographic have an incredible multi-platform exploration of Mars. So Mars is going to be a television channel series. It will be the cover of National Geographic. It will be the cover of National Geographic Kids. Obviously, stories presented in a different way. We've got a wonderful book coming out on Mars, and we have just an enormous amount of social and digital content coming about Mars. Then in January, we are doing an entire issue on the topic of gender. I mean, gender and how people think about gender is a very current topic, and it's really changing how we live. And so we've gone all over the world talking to people about what's it like to be a boy and what's it like to be a girl in your culture, and how would it be different if you were somebody of the other gender. But we've also looked at the science of gender and examined growing evidence that gender is not necessarily a binary boy-girl choice, but is a continuum. And so I think this will be a really fascinating issue.
It used to be that National Geographic went to foreign lands, right, and brought back the stories and the pictures. Increasingly, though, it seems, and there was a big story on Detroit that you did, increasingly you're, I guess, looking inward, right, looking around here and looking at other ways to inform and explore.
I would say that we are doing foreign coverage as much as we ever have.
It wasn't a question about turning away from porn. It was looking for other areas to explore, right? Places and
I
themes.
I do think it's worth noting that, you know, most of the world lives in cities. By 2050, two-thirds of the world's population will live in cities. And so there are all kinds of stories that we need to tell through the lens of where people are. So we can tell stories about environment and sustainability and cultures through the lens of cities. And that was why we did a Detroit story.
Right.
We recently did a Miami story. We did a Lagos, Nigeria story. We did a story about Berlin and Athens. We've been covering a lot of cities lately.
This is a little sideways, but when I was in college, I subscribed to National Geographic, the magazine, which is all it was then, only so I could get that big atlas of the world, that giant, enormous, hardbound atlas of the world.
That one that I have over there on that
right?
table.
I mean, it's up on my bookshelf at home. Sometimes today when my kids say, hey, Dad, where's this, or where are we going on this trip? Instead of going to the computer, I pull out the atlas, and just to show them the idea of hardcover and paper maps. Maybe this is false romanticism, but do you worry that that's lost a little bit? The idea of, you know, National Geo used to come with these maps that you want to fold and put on your wall.
We still do those maps at least 3 or 4 times a year. But, you know, our maps business is quite profitable and a very busy concern. We publish lots of different kinds of maps. We still publish the Atlas. We have, I think, our 10th edition of the Atlas that was just published. But I would have to say that I do see young people having a little more trouble reading a map than I wish were the case. And maps are beautiful and they're historic and they help you put your world into context in a way that just understanding what's the next right or what's the next left is that you need to make on your GPS does not do. And that's the beauty of maps. It helps people understand the world.
Usually I ask executives what the best part of their job is. What's the worst part of this job?
The worst part of this job, just like the worst part of all of my other jobs, was dealing with the uncertainty and the best and worst part of my job is dealing with the changing business model that the whole digital revolution has caused. It is innovative, it is exciting, it allows us to reach more and more diverse audiences than ever. At the same time, it does create a lot of uncertainty, and so grappling with that is probably the hardest part of my job.
And we should say here, there have been in the past year or so some layoffs at National Geo, right? The biggest ever?
I don't know if it's the biggest ever, but there have been some layoffs, and I think you're seeing that across the media landscape.
There's a thing I do with some people I speak with. Some can do it, some can't. We'll see how you do.
Uh-oh.
Tell me what your job is in 5 words or less. And I will tell you here that President Obama blew it. So you're in good company if you can't do it. Mm. Ooh, that's a terrible face. Don't make that face. She's counting.
I can't do it in 5 words or less.
All right, try.
Changing the world through unique storytelling.
6, that's not terrible.
All right.
That's all right. I'll give you that. Are you a journalist? Are you an educator? What are you?
I'm a journalist. It's all I ever wanted to be. I'm so proud to be a journalist. I'm an evangelist for journalism that changes the world.
Susan Goldberg, thanks very much.
Thank you.
That was Susan Goldberg, the editor-in-chief of National Geographic Magazine. Thanks for listening. Another episode for you in a couple of weeks. And while you're at it, leave us those reviews. Tell us what you like or don't, but be gentle.